Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage's completely online process lets you get a custom mortgage solution wherever and whenever you want. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Donald Trump flew to Mexico City yesterday and struck a presidential pose. He flew back to Phoenix and went hard line again on immigration. Doubled down on his border wall between Mexico and the U.S., pledged to kick millions out, to deny legal status to anyone who remains in the country illegally, to use ideological screening for immigrants who want to live in America. Hillary Clinton has a different approach. It's all on the table now. This hour on Point, Trump, Clinton, and politics and policy around American immigration. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Who speaks to you on the border and American policy on immigration? What do you hear from Trump, from Clinton? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Donald Trump in Mexico City had a press conference after his meeting with the Mexican president, Enrique Peña Nieto, yesterday, and spoke warmly about his respect for Mexican Americans.
First, second, and third generation Mexicans are just beyond reproach. Spectacular, spectacular, hardworking people. I have such great respect for them and their strong values of family, faith, and community.
But back with supporters in Phoenix, Arizona, it was a very different tone. And step one, he said, build a wall.
We will build a great wall along the southern border. Mexico will pay for the wall.
Okay, another phase of Donald Trump. We're going to dive in. With us now from Washington is Ginger Gibson. She's a campaign reporter for Reuters covering Donald Trump. Ginger, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you here.
Glad to be back with you today.
Also with us from Washington, Eliana Johnson, Washington editor for the National Review. Eliana, welcome back. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
And from Miami, Florida, Alan Gomez joins us, immigration reporter at USA Today. Alan, it's always great to have you here.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Ginger Gibson, first to you. So is there a change in policy here over the last 24 hours or not? The policy seems to float and morph and evolve a lot over the last week and more. Did Donald Trump soften yesterday or did he double down?
He doubled down. You know, we were expecting, based on what he was saying and what his campaign had been saying for the last week, that we were going to see a softening. We thought he was potentially going to abandon a wall, that he was going to pull back some of his calls to deport people. The speech he gave last night in Phoenix was a strengthening, a reiteration of everything that he has said before. He said that he suggested that anyone who has come to the country illegally would be capable of being deported, which would be another part of that 11 million people being deported that he has said before. He repeated his call for building a wall, insisted that Mexico is going to pay for it, even though he didn't broach or admitted he didn't broach that subject when he was in Mexico with the Mexican president. There was a lot of thought that we were going to see a new, different, softer Donald Trump, and that was not what we saw in Phoenix last night.
He said they didn't discuss who would pay for the wall. The Mexican president, of course, tweeting later that he did bring up that issue and said Mexico would not. Alan Gomez, when you look at this, I mean, Donald Trump came out of the gates last summer, more than a year ago now, saying essentially deportation for 11 million people. Where does he stand on that now?
Well, I think that's the one thing that we saw at least a little bit of a change from him on. To give you an idea, when I was watching the speech last night, I was reading through his August 2015 immigration plan, and it was pretty much point by point. And so a lot of what we heard last night was exactly what he's been advocating for this entire year. But what he did say this time is that, A, he was going to focus only on – he was going to focus mostly on criminal undocumented immigrants, about 2 million of those, and make sure we get those out of the country. And the rest of them, if they wanted to stay in the to get some sort of legal status would have to go home and reapply. And then at the end, he did allow for this idea that once we create this massive wall, once we establish this immigration enforcement infrastructure in the country, after all that is done and the country is assured that there won't be future waves of illegal immigration, that maybe then he would consider what he would do with some of the people who remain. So, you know, that I think was an interesting point, and it's something he's been talking about over the last week that has led many people to think that he's softening. Obviously, the tone of the entire speech was very much what we've heard over the past year, but there was that little bit of an opening.
I mean, the talk of deportation was on a very large scale a year ago. It was still a large scale yesterday, maybe not 11 million, but 2 million, some say more, depending how you read what he's saying. That's part of what's interesting about Trump on these policy things. I mean, what does he actually intend? But he put a number on it yesterday in Phoenix.
There are at least 2 million, think of it, criminal aliens now inside of our country. 2 million people, criminal aliens. We will begin moving them out day one, as soon as I take office, day one.
We want to do a little fact-checking right there. I've seen numbers under 200,000 for serious offenses. Minor offenses, maybe 2 million if you throw in traffic tickets and the rest. We'll look at that. Eliana Johnson, look at the politics of this for us for a minute here. What's Donald Trump attempting to do in his conciliatory, kind of respectful tone in Mexico City and then coming back to the raucous tone of Phoenix? How's this working for or against him?
You know, he really took sort of a schizophrenic approach yesterday, because his trip to Mexico, if bizarre, was really successful in the end. He pulled off a sort of political jujitsu last-minute trip that made him appear presidential, standing next to another world leader, side by side, and then came back and, as you said, gave this raucous speech before really a campaign style rally in Phoenix. And, you know, we use these terms softening and tone.
Yep.
And I think it really gets to the point that style really matters as much as substance. And so we've been talking about what his positions are, but his style, regardless of the positions that he enunciated, was aggressive, hard, and regardless of what he said, he certainly didn't come across as though he was backing off any of his previous positions. And he certainly, I don't think anybody watching him, say, with the sound off or the sound turned off on their televisions, wouldn't have had the impression that he was trying to bring new people or appeal to new people, lure new people into his political coalition outside his base, which is what he needs to be doing right now.
I mean, Ginger, what is the Trump campaign trying to do here specifically? Are they trying to, with his, you know, showing up in the presidential palace in Mexico City, standing next to the Mexican president and being fairly subdued there, are they trying to bring comfort to those who think he's been too fiery on the immigration front, to voters who may find him too volatile? If they are, what's up with the Phoenix rally? What's the calculus here, Ginger?
I think you see on full display yesterday a campaign with a lot of internal divisions about what they should be doing and who they should be reaching out to. Kellyanne Conway, who's been in the business, who's a very good pollster, she knows that they need to be reaching out to broaden that coalition, to add more people to Donald Trump's base, that you can't win elections with just your sort of 35% hardened supporters. And you hear her on television doing a lot of those interviews that we got the suggestion that he may be softening his tone and his position, saying that she wasn't sure that deportation forces were going to be a part of it, that there could be some consideration for the people that are left in the country. And then you saw Donald Trump give a speech that much echoes the tone and the posture of others within his campaign, of Steve Bannon, of Stephen Miller, who worked for Jeff Sessions, who also holds many of those positions and uses those type of tones, and was with Donald Trump yesterday. you know, Eliana talked about a schizophrenic day. I think we are seeing a campaign that's got two power sources pulling at one another. And that was on full display for voters to see. I think that in Trump's policy and yesterday, they're presenting a sort of choose your own adventure option to Donald Trump. If you like the very diplomatic, very calm toned Donald Trump you saw in Mexico City, mm-hmm. well, you can pick that one to vote for. And if you like the yelling, the harsh tone that you saw in Phoenix, well, you can pick that one, too.
Eliana, he's not the first politician who speaks in different ways to different crowds. Do you see more than the usual, you know, tone tailoring for the audience?
I really do. You know, at the heart of successful presidential campaigns really is message discipline. And that's something that the Trump campaign has not had in the general election, which has become problematic for him. And one thing that I think has been overlooked in all of this is that Trump has the heart of his problem on immigration is that he talked about this deportation force back in November of 2015, and even the most ardent immigration hawks oppose a deportation force. That was something that Trump seems to have come up with on his own. He blurted it out on MSNBC way back when in the primary before he had policy advisors, and it's something that even the Jeff Sessionses of the world have been telling him, you got to back off this.
Why? Because it sounds like stormtroopers in the night in special uniforms?
Not only does it sound like that, but it's politically impractical, extremely expensive. And, you know, even people who favor limiting illegal and illegal immigration don't favor, you know, sending out forces of people to drag people out of their houses and throw them, you know, back into Mexico.
But how are you going to push 2 million people out of the country? And he said, I think yesterday he would try and do it in months, or at least start immediately without some special organization or force or effort, Eliana.
You know, what I think what all of the immigration hawks around Trump have been saying is, you know, let's enforce the laws on the books now in terms of securing the border. And we talk about the 11 million illegal immigrants currently in the country later after we deal with actually securing the border. That's not what Trump said in his speech yesterday. But the problem really has been getting him to back off this talk of a deportation force, which he didn't quite do. And he's been getting all sorts of different advice about how to do that. And I think that's where all the confusion has come from in the past week and a half.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about American immigration and Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, his trip to Mexico, their positions, and what this country's policy on immigrants should be. You can join us this hour. What did you make of Trump in Mexico, in Mexico City? Is he speaking for you or not? Does this country need a deportation force, task force? Does it need millions out right now? Does it need a different way of screening? Does it need a wall? And what about Hillary Clinton? Where would she take the U.S. on immigration? What do you want here in terms of policy direction for the country? Eliana Johnson's with us, editor at the National Review in Washington. Ginger Gibson with us as well, covers Donald Trump for Reuters. Alan Gomez, immigration reporter at USA Today. Hillary Clinton was at the American Legion in Cincinnati yesterday. She responded to Trump's visit to Mexico City and with Mexican President Enrique Peña Nieto.
It certainly takes more than trying to make up for a year of insults and insinuations by dropping in on our neighbors for a few hours and then flying home again. That is not how it works.
You could read plenty of voices out of Mexico saying the same thing yesterday, saying the Mexican president had been too diplomatic in receiving Donald Trump, you know, neutrally, but with proper etiquette into the presidential palace there. Hillary Clinton said in March in a debate that this isn't the big problem that Trump is pointing to, that America has the most secure border we've ever had. She says it's time to focus on immigration reform, a path to citizenship.
We enhanced the border security. That part of the work is done. Everybody that I know has looked at it says, okay, we have a secure border. There's no need for this rhetoric and demagoguery that still is carried out on the Republican side. You've run out of excuses. Let's move to comprehensive immigration reform with a path to citizenship.
immigration reform, path to citizenship. Very different tone from Trump. Here he was in Phoenix last night, all about the wall.
On day one, we will begin working on an impenetrable, physical, tall, powerful, beautiful southern border wall.
Bring on the wall. Alan Gomez, Elena Johnson, Ginger Gibson, stand by. Callers for the three of you. Royal Oak, Michigan, Patrick is calling. Patrick, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Real quick, very big fan. I appreciate very much the work you do in bringing knowledge and insight to a world of media that's usually untrustworthy and hard to deal with, but thank you for what you do.
Sure. What do you think today?
Well, I feel like we're just stuck in the same cycle where we continually discuss Donald Trump and his change, and, you know, he gives these speeches, and I look at PolitiFact, and the speeches are just kind of yelling and lies. There's no real truth to it, but it continues to dominate, you know, the election cycle, the discussion we're having here. And then we kind of talk about Hillary a little bit, but mostly it's all about Donald. And in the meantime, I never hear anything about Gary Johnson brought up, even though his poll numbers continue to rise. He's an actual former border state governor, so probably has maybe a little more direct insight into this issue than, you know, Donald
Trump.
I mean,
we've talked to Gary Johnson right here. Gary Johnson gets his time at the microphone. Patrick, let us pick it up. Alan Gomez. Okay, I mean, we're talking about Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton today. He's out front because he flew to Mexico City. She could have done that. She could have stood next to the Mexican president. She didn't. He is the Republican candidate, and he's talking about a pretty important issue for this country. You've covered immigration. Is this where the conversation needs to be, Alan?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think for all of us who are covering this election and all of us who have a specific focus on immigration, trying to understand exactly what Trump is proposing is very important. The reason we don't talk as much about Hillary Clinton and her immigration proposals is because we know exactly what she's looking at. She said that she wants to continue and in some cases expand some of the policies of President Obama of protecting undocumented immigrants who are in the country and protecting them from deportation. She talks about the pathway to citizenship. And so it's very clear what direction she's trying to go. And so in the meantime, what we're trying to do is listen to these speeches that Trump has been delivering to understand what he is really proposing. Because right now, after last night's speech, I still don't know if he wants to deport all 11 million undocumented immigrants. As I was saying earlier, I think we can't just ignore the fact that he said, hey, maybe some of those that stay in the country after all that stuff is done, maybe we'll think about what to do with them then. So for us, it's very important to try to understand exactly what he's proposing, how he's going to pay for all these things, because, you know, building a wall, adding all these ICE agents, doing all the things that he wants to do are so far beyond what has been approved by Congress to do. So, yeah, it's important, I think, to understand that so that voters can, you know, understand what they're doing when they go into the ballot box in November.
Let's start with paying for the wall. That was an issue that came out of his time in Mexico City. Trump said that they didn't discuss it. The Mexican president tweeted later in the day that he had brought it up right away and said Mexico would not pay for it. At a joint press conference with the Mexican president after their meeting, Trump here said he would build a wall, said that the issue of who would pay didn't come up.
We did discuss the wall. We didn't discuss payment of the wall. That'll be for a later date. This was a very preliminary meeting.
Ginger Gibson, can we just get into the facts here? We'll start with this little one. Whether it was talked about or not, is this a semantic difference? The Mexican president says, well, I brought it up and said we would not pay for it.
You know, I heard someone say maybe got lost in translation. Let's be clear, the Mexican president speaks English. So there was no translation problem there. But I think what we're seeing is, you know, there was lots of praise for Donald Trump coming out of this meeting yesterday. Said he looked presidential. The risk going in was always that he was going to come home empty-handed. He's not the president of the United States. He couldn't negotiate any deal. Part, as we heard him repeat later in the day, his big talking point, his big selling point is that he's a grand negotiator and that he would make Mexico do these things. And we saw the Clinton campaign trying to capitalize on the fact that he didn't broach the subject, you know, sort of mocking his ability to negotiate. And that was always going to be the risk. And I think that had he just had that trip yesterday and everyone would have said, okay, well, that's an easy attack line for Clinton. That's all that it is. We'll just ignore it and move on. It was that he then got up in Phoenix and said, and Mexico's going to pay for the wall, despite saying earlier in the day that he hadn't talked about it. Did they talk about it? I mean, maybe we'll never have any way of knowing because we weren't in the room unless someone was running a tape recorder. And then I guess maybe that would be the only way. But it has become a sticking point and a vulnerability for him from his opponent.
We know that the former Mexican president, Vicente Fox, back in February said there's no way he'd pay for Donald Trump's proposed wall.
I'm not going to pay for that wall. He should pay for it.
There's been a lot of heat back and forth here. Eliana, just the facts, as far as we know them, is it clear? Donald Trump always says, oh, they'll pay, as though he's got some kind of nifty plan up his sleeve that Mexico could not say no to. Is it clear what the mechanism would be for this gigantic public works project?
Well, he said that he would force Mexico to pay through remittances and they'd have no choice because they couldn't control, you know, his ability to do that.
I mean, when Mexicans or Mexican-Americans tried to send money home to other Mexicans, he would take a bite out of that?
Exactly, exactly. And he said that when they're sending money home, he would withhold some of that money and it'd be more than enough to pay for this wall that will have a door in it. Whatever kind of wall he wants. And of course, when Vicente Fox dissented from that view, he said, oh, well, the wall just got 10 feet higher. But one thing I did find curious yesterday was that the Mexican president, Trump, said that they had not discussed who would pay for the wall right during the press conference. And mm-hmm. It wasn't until several hours later that the Mexican president said, no, they that they had discussed it. Mm-hmm. He had brought it up and he said he would not pay for the wall. And several people pointed out he had an opportunity to disagree with Trump or contradict him during the press conference. And it was a little bit confusing as to why he waited until several hours later to do it. I'm still not exactly sure why that happened. And it didn't really make sense. Sort of one of the unanswered questions of yesterday. He certainly had an opportunity to embarrass Trump and he didn't do it. And in doing so, he played a role in it, kind of ironically helping Trump have perhaps the best day of his general election campaign.
I mean, he gets to chopper in a great big chopper, Alan Gomez, into a foreign capital, meet with a foreign head of state. I mean, the Mexican president has to be careful in a way here. This could be the next president of the United States. He doesn't maybe want to insult him to his face right there. On the other hand, he did come out with a tweet and say, no, I brought it up. What about another factual point, Alan? When Donald Trump says, you know, 2 million criminals, undocumented immigrant criminals in this country. What are the facts there? I've seen numbers under 200,000 when it comes to more than minor offenses.
Right, and that comes down to sort of degrees of criminality. When you look at 2 million, that generally refers to the number of undocumented immigrants, if you take into account those who've been arrested and convicted for violent crimes, you know, obviously murders, homicides, things like that, but all the way down to traffic infractions, to DUIs, to more, you know, even civil kind of violations. And so what the president, President Obama right now is doing is trying to use his limited deportation dollars to focus on those with violent backgrounds, those with ties to gangs, those with ties to those that pose some kind of national security threat.
So Obama's already done that.
He's been doing that in the past couple of weeks, actually. We heard Donald Trump actually utter a little bit of praise for the president for doing that and saying that he wants to continue that. But when we talk about that bigger 2 million number, again, that's getting into a lot of misdemeanor crimes, a lot of smaller things that wouldn't necessarily be part of that wouldn't get you necessarily deported right now under the Obama administration. But one of the things Trump said last night was anybody who gets arrested for any crime will suddenly be eligible for deportation. And that's the jump between what President Obama is doing right now and what Trump is proposing.
And, of course, it's a way of portraying, and he's not shy about this, portraying many, many, many people in this country illegally as criminals. Here he was talking about the deportation force that he would put together. He said right away to begin to move them out.
I am going to create a new special deportation task force focused on identifying and quickly removing the most dangerous criminal illegal immigrants in America who have evaded justice, just like Hillary Clinton has evaded justice, okay?
Okay, okay, throwing in Hillary Clinton there. But Eliana, on the face of it, you know, you can't really put 2 million people out without some additional special manpower applied to that. Why go there if we're talking about traffic tickets? Is it part of a racial appeal?
look, it's silly to talk about a special deportation force. We have border agents. We have an immigration and customs enforcement agency. And if Trump wants to increase the number of ICE agents, as the immigration and custom enforcement agents are known as, he could do that. But I think it's a little bit silly to talk about a special deportation force, and it sounds scarier than it is. But regardless of you know, how many people get traffic tickets, I don't think that's who Trump's talking about. But certainly we should be getting
rid
of...
Well, but it appears to be who he's talking about. If you put the number at 2 million, you don't get anywhere near that with serious crimes.
Yeah, there's debate, you know, whether it's 690,000 or, you know, 1.5 million. But whatever the number of the people who are committing serious crimes, that's who he's talking about. He used the number 2 million. I am not sure what the mm-hmm. number is, but we have an agency that is supposed to be removing those people already. And there's no need to create a special force to, you know, deport them from the country.
Shauna in Buffalo, New York. Shauna, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I have a question. This is kind of a semi-rhetorical question, but I wonder if anyone who has made plans for a mass and quick deportation of millions of people has planned for filling the jobs that these people take, primarily in agriculture. I feel that there are not very many Americans that want to work in the very exploitative realm of, you know, mass mega agriculture. They don't want to be paid the very, very low wages that a lot of our illegal immigrants are paid. And I wonder if anyone's planned for the kind of interim where we try and fill these jobs.
The economic impact, if we don't have enough Americans ready to jump in and whatever, chop chickens in Mississippi. Alan Gomez, what about it? If you start talking about millions out of the country and the way the American economy works, Donald Trump presents that as a net positive. Is it?
So looking at this, Trump basically last night said that it was that undocumented immigrants cost this country over $100 billion a year in health care, in education, and all that sort of stuff. What those kind of analyses always fail to include are, A, the contributions that undocumented immigrants pay into the system through income tax, sales tax, property taxes, and the work that they're doing. I can tell you, I've traveled around this country. I've been to farms. I've been to all sorts of ranches and talked to so many ranch owners and farm owners who tell me that they continue to try to recruit American workers to do those jobs, but Americans just largely don't want to do that work anymore. It's seasonal. It's migratory. It's incredibly backbreaking, difficult work. And the caller's absolutely right. There are untold numbers of farms and ranches in this country that would go under if not for this labor. Yes, there definitely needs to be a way to reform the system so we can get those workers in legally and move them around the country. But just saying pick them all up and get them all out of here, no, nobody has an answer on how to replace that workforce.
Ginger Gibson, you cover Trump. There's been plenty of coverage of Trump's own business operations, wherein there are plenty of immigrants who work there. He's a business guy. He must know that many business people in this country hire, employ, deploy lots and lots of Mexican Americans just for starters. How does he see the economic impact if he starts throwing millions out?
I mean, Donald Trump's message is that he will do this to give jobs to those uneducated, poor people in our country. I mean, we heard him say that last night. We heard him say it the last few weeks, that these immigrants, these undocumented immigrants are stealing jobs. I mean, you listen to him in his acceptance speech at the convention, and he said immigrants are overrunning our schools and our hospitals. They're taking your resources, and I'm going to get them back for you. You know, anyone who's ever looked at what it would take to run our nation's agricultural system, what it would take to run sort of large other industries, construction key among them, of which he comes from, know that it probably would not be possible to immediately remove all those people and replace them with those who can legally work in the country. Some who have sort of offered more detailed plans. I mean, we talk about Trump's proposal. The problem is that it's not like he's got a white paper somewhere that like gets into all of these details. We are piecing them together from the things he says in these speeches and what he says on cable networks. But people who have looked more diligently say, well, you create a visa system and you give visas to these people to come in and work. Maybe Trump would do that, but we just don't know.
He talked about a lot of screening, about screening for capacities that this country needs. That's been controversial in itself, where more highly educated Americans see potential competition there. We'll look at that when we return. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings home financing into the 21st century with a completely online process that's fast, easy, and convenient. Using a phone or tablet, you can safely share bank statements and pay stubs without having to dig through piles of paperwork. It takes just a few minutes to get a custom mortgage solution on your terms, wherever and whenever you want. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about American immigration and Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, his trip to Mexico, their positions, and what this country's policy on immigrants should be. Alan Gomez is with us from USA Today, with us from Miami. From Washington, Eliana Johnson at the National Review and Ginger Gibson are with us. She's with Reuters and covers Donald Trump. You can join us this hour. What did you make of Trump in Mexico? In Phoenix, two sides of the coin there. One a little more, soft. One, pretty darn hard. Or what about the Clinton way? Try to find a way to let people who are in the country and who are not engaged in criminal activity have a path to citizenship or legal residence in the United States. Is that the way we need to go? Our economy needs to go. Donald Trump saying last night in Phoenix, it's all about a kind of maximal approach. Target every undocumented immigrant in the country.
Our message to the world will be this. You cannot obtain legal status or become a citizen of the United States by illegally entering our country. Can't do it.
And if you want to come into that big, beautiful door he says will be in the wall, there's going to be an ideological questionnaire for you, no matter where you come from in the world. Here he was again last night in Phoenix.
Another reform involves new screening tests for all applicants that include, and this is so important, especially if you get the right people, and we will get the right people, an ideological certification to make sure that those we are admitting to our country share our values and love our people.
Ginger Gibson with Reuters. There's a lot that's not all laid out in black and white here, but has the Trump campaign been any more forthright about how exactly you would screen immigrants from all over the planet on their love of American values and people?
Extreme vetting, Donald Trump said last night, adding one more extreme to the extreme we knew before. He's also said that they would let the State Department decide on which countries, although then he said the State Department's been brutalized, so I don't know how much you trust them. So, no, we don't have any more details on how he would vet these people. And there's a lot of pushback at this. Religious tests are not something that sit well with parts of the American public.
Was it a religious test? Is that what he's talking about?
I mean, we're talking about values. We're talking about do you agree with American values was the word he used. Think back. It was not that long ago that people opposed immigrants from Ireland because they were Catholic, and they said that Catholics didn't share.
Yeah, but American values in our Constitution says that we don't have a state religion, so that's American value.
That's the problem. We don't know what we're talking about here. Is it that you can agree with the Constitution? Is it that you agree with the criticism of Colin Kaepernick for not standing for the Pledge of Allegiance? Do you have to swear an oath to stand for the Pledge of Allegiance once you become legally admitted into the country? We don't know. It is words that are 10,000 foot and that describe things that don't have tangible things you can point to. And I think that that's part of the criticism of this proposal is how do you screen people and what exactly are you screening for? And it is done in the wake of Donald Trump saying he would ban specifically Muslims. This is an evolution of that position, perhaps, or maybe independent of that position. But it is in the same vein. And I think that's why we hear a lot of criticism for it.
He named Syria and Libya again yesterday as potential sources of immigrants that he would not accept them, though that blanket Muslim ban, yesterday. He said ideological screening, yes, and more than that, who would be financially self-sufficient here? Here he was in Phoenix.
To select immigrants based on their likelihood of success
in U.S. society and their ability to be financially self-sufficient. We take anybody. Come on in, anybody. Just come on in. Not anymore.
Not anymore, said Donald Trump last night. Hillary Clinton responding, this is last summer, in response to his first out-of-the-gate comments on Mexicans and rapists and criminals and all the rest, took a very different approach, saying, look, that's not the way to talk about people coming in from across our southern border. Here's Hillary Clinton in July of 2015 talking with the National Council of La Raza in Kansas City.
It was appalling to hear Donald Trump describe immigrants as drug dealers, rapists, and criminals. He's talking about people you and I know, isn't he? He's talking about people who love this country, work hard, and want nothing more than a chance to build a better life for themselves and their children.
Ellen Gomez, is Donald Trump talking about an immigration policy more like Canada's, where it's more skills-based, with a great exception for refugees, for far more than the United States lately? But is that what he's suggesting here?
It is. I just wish the tone were a little bit different so we can have the discussion, because it's a fascinating debate to have. Look, the United States is one of the last remaining countries that the majority of the immigrants that it accepts are based on family ties. You look at countries like Canada, Australia, throughout Europe, and to get into that country, you have to – they grade you on what your education is, on what your skills are, and it has nothing to do with family ties. And so there is a debate about trying to flip that around and trying to make the U.S. more – of a merit-based immigration system. But again, that's something that's just very – it's kind of buried under everything else that we're talking about, right? But that's been a long time – that's been a long-standing debate, and there's a lot of people in this country who would like to see that flipped around. And there is some validity to the idea of, rather than extending what they call family chain migration, which means you get into the country and then, boom, the rest of your family eventually makes it in, and switching to something where it's more focused on the economy, more focused on what you can contribute whether in technology or STEM, science, technology, education, mathematics, put the focus on that.
Philip in Pikeville, Kentucky. Thank you for calling, Philip. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Tom.
Hi.
I guess the comment I would like to make was I don't know that Donald Trump's ideas are completely unprecedented. The Eisenhower administration, with, you know, much fewer border enforcement agents than what we had today, succeeded in deporting over 1 million illegal immigrants within the period of nearly a year, only a year. And then my understanding of the operation was that after that was successful, that over 1 million people self-deported after the fact. And I guess my second comment would be that, you know, this idea that people can come in on family ties is a rather recent development, that it, from the 1920s until the 1965 immigration bill signed by Lyndon Johnson, that people, in fact, did have to demonstrate a skill set to get into the United States. So I guess what I would say is, what do our commentators think about that? And I'll be willing to take my comments off the air.
Philip, I appreciate your call. Eliana Johnson, you go all the way back to the Eisenhower administration in the 1950s. And yes, they pushed a lot out in a hurry. It's language we do not use anymore, but they called it Operation Wetback, and it was a large number. So Philip says, hey, we did it then. What about doing it again?
Yeah, and Trump has actually praised Operation Wetback and said it's something that he would like to emulate. But Operation Wetback wasn't undertaken in a particularly humane way. And I don't think it's not something that you hear politicians now say that it's something we should do because of the humanitarian aspects. But to go back to Alan's point, you know, Donald Trump's style makes these sorts of things very difficult to talk about. But the debate, I think it's easy to dismiss him because of his style as a sort of having crazy, overblown rhetoric. But the debate between whether the United States should continue having an immigration system based on family ties, or whether, as many conservatives and Republicans have been arguing, the system should be based more on merit and what immigrants can contribute or bring to the country, is really, I think, an important debate to have. It is what Trump talked about last night. And, you know, with respect to ideological tests, when people become citizens, rather, obviously, that's that's not what what all immigrants intend to do. But we do make people take, you know, an oath of loyalty to the country. Mm-hmm. And I think these things are less crazy than Donald Trump makes them sound, though there are aspects of what he talked about, like a deportation force or like praise of Operation Wetback, that are things a lot of people consider beyond the pale.
Jim in Providence, Rhode Island. Jim, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my phone call. This issue affects me personally and has been for over 10 years. Oh. I am a small business owner, and some of my competition hires illegal aliens. And the problem is when they get caught, there's a small penalty and fine, and they go back to doing the same thing. And when I've brought up to potential new clients that the company they're considering hiring hires illegal aliens, they turn the other cheek because they're getting such a great deal on the price. The wall is not the answer. The answer is the same way we took down the mafia. If you tell people they're going to have a lot of jail time for hiring illegal aliens, you'll see how fast employers decide, you know what, I am not going to take a chance. I have to make sure. I have to e-verify. And these people will leave voluntarily. We can say a year from now, this policy is going to be instituted. And then that gives employers and also the illegal people time enough to go back to their countries and employers to hire legal people from this country so that we can all play on the same playing field. Because for years, I've been sick of having to look at other contracts and say, how is this guy doing this for less than what I can pay my people, for less than if I paid my people even minimum wage?
Yeah, and where are you coming from in this, Jim? Are you a rock-ribbed Republican? Are you a Democrat? Are you something else?
No, Donald Trump is crazy with the wall thing. The wall is not the answer. The answer is to penalize employers highly and deeply with either super big fines, because the fines that they're penalizing the companies that I deal with are too small. They
just don't do it.
Slap on the wrist.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you tell them they're going to put them in jail, you'll see how fast people will not hire them.
Yeah, Jim, stand by. Alan Gomez, okay. What about on Hillary Clinton's side? Is she addressing that kind of issue or not with her proposals? I mean, she wants to reform the immigration detention system. It's ballooned since the year 2000, I think more than doubled in size. We got a lot of people, children, families detained, and that's a problem. She wants more deferred deportations along the same lines as Barack Obama ran into trouble with the Supreme Court on, I guess. But would she take steps that would alleviate the kind of problem that our small business owner says he sees?
Well, I think what's fascinating, like, first off, what Jim is going through is exactly why we have 11 million undocumented immigrants in this country, because they can get here, because there's jobs for them, and because the penalties to employ them are very low and have been through several administrations. But when looking at Hillary, when looking at Trump, what's fascinating is that on so many aspects of this, there's widespread agreement in Congress, from Trump, from Clinton. When we talk about expanding the use of E-Verify, which is a program that allows employers to quickly check the immigration status,
would she do that? Is she proposing that?
That is something. It's not exactly something she completely supports, but it comes up in the context of when we're looking at comprehensive immigration reform. Democrats accept that as long as it means we get a pathway to citizenship. So that's part of the negotiation. That's part of that broader package of a larger change to our legal immigration system to allow for more workers to get in here legally while still kind of verifying the workers that we have in here. So it's part of that bigger compromise that we've seen come up from time to time and that both of these candidates have embraced in large part.
Ginger, is there any implicit in Trump not pushing so hard on all 11 million people who are in the country illegally being pushed out? Is there implicit that he too is thinking about some kind of path to long-term resident status here? Is that maybe not stated, but implicit? Or can he not say that because his most sort of core supporters never want to hear it?
You know, I think that it sounds so cliche, but it's a bit of a choose your own adventure. If you were listening to Trump and you heard him say anyone who came to this country illegally could be subject to deportation, then you hear he's going to deport all 11 million people. If you hear him say, well, at the end of the day, maybe we'll take a look at some of the people that are left here and we'll decide if we're going to do something different, then you say, oh, well, he's going to be more open to a pathway for some type of legal legalization. I think the big thing here is tone. His tone is very different from, say, Jeb Bush, who also wanted E-Verify, who also wanted to strengthen border security, but who said in a very different tone that the people that were here should be treated humanely. I mean, we talk about, and Donald Trump referenced Eisenhower's program, which has a word that myself as a Mexican-American am not going to say out loud because it has been used as a slur in my lifetime, right?
Mm-hmm. So yes, understood.
I think that that's the kind of tone that doesn't make people think like, okay, if I'm a law-abiding citizen who works really hard and pays my taxes and does everything in my community I'm supposed to do, except I came here illegally as a child, Donald Trump's going to give me maybe another chance. Donald Trump's not conveying that tone to anyone. And so we can try to parse his words to figure out what the policy is. But if you're a voter who's brother is that child who was brought here and is now an adult living in the shadows, you don't have any confidence, I don't believe, out of that tone that Donald Trump is going to see your brother or your parent as someone who needs a second chance or a new chance at finding some lifelong comfort here.
Eliana, did you hear Donald Trump getting on a path closer to an arc toward the presidency yesterday in the politics side of all this? And what about on the some allege he's stoking racism here. What about the party longer term beyond Trump?
Well, two very different questions. First of all, one thing that Trump didn't do yesterday was to bash Mexicans or Mexico, which is what we heard him do when he descended the escalator at Trump Tower in June of 2015.
They're bringing crime, they're rapists.
Yeah, rather he praised the country, he praised its president, and he did so both in Mexico City and in Phoenix. And I think that was an enormous improvement for him. He's cut that out, which was a great change to see. No, I don't think he put himself on a path toward the presidency because he has taken he was not consistent in his tone or his style or the substance of his comments. But to continue on what you were speaking about with Ginger, tacit in all of the conservative, Republican, even with Trump's immigration plan, is that, yes, of course, some of these undocumented people are going to stay in the country. What they say is, oh, we'll address them after we get border enforcement. But in none of these plans are we, throwing all these people out of the country. That's not in the cards.
Hillary Clinton, of course, pointing out that the numbers coming across the border have gone way down. She describes that as a border under control. Pick your own adventure is the way you put it, Ginger Gibson, and American voters may have to do exactly that. Ginger, covering the Trump campaign with us today from Washington, thank you so much for being with us from Reuters.
Thanks for having me.
Eliana Johnson, Washington editor for the National Review. Always great to have you. Thank you very much, Eliana.
Thanks, Tom.
And Alan Gomez, immigration reporter at USA Today, with us from Miami. Thank you, Alan. Thank you very much.
Tom, thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.